listening to Success Unwrapped with Heather Vail.
Welcome to Success Unwrapped with Heather Vail, the weekly radio talk show where we unwrap and reveal the secrets that successful people use, and you can too. Available at successunwrappedradio.com. My special guest this week is Raymond Aron, one of the most sought-after speakers in the world, who is known as Canada's number one success, business, and investment coach. He's also the author of at least 15 books and the co-author of bestsellers Chicken Soup for the Parent Soul and Chicken Soup for the Canadian Soul. Over the past 20 years, he has appeared on hundreds of radio and TV shows. He teaches people how to double, triple, or even quadruple their income doing what they love. And today, he'll share some of his success secrets with us. Raymond, welcome to the show.
I'm happy to be here, Heather. Thank you so much for inviting me.
Oh, thank you for being here. Now, could you start off by letting us know how your quest for success began?
Well, I graduated from university as a nuclear physicist, and then I started my career driving taxi cab. And basically what I'm saying is I had no idea what I was doing. I was very bright in mathematics and physics, and so I studied it. But when I graduated from university, I really didn't want to do that. So I drove taxi cab, I was a computer salesman, I imported foreign sports cars, I was a private eye, I manufactured soft drinks, I opened a chain of women's weight reducing salons, and none of them did particularly well, but I was learning and learning through the school of hard knocks. And then one day, believe it or not, sitting on top of a pyramid, which is a ruin in the Yucatan Peninsula, Chichen Itza, the Mayan ruin, I suddenly got the message that I was supposed to be a teacher. And I came down from the pyramid, and that's been 23 years later. I've been teaching around the world ever since. And all those many businesses that I started and failed and started and didn't do that well and started and succeeded, what they really were, if I look at my life spiritually, they were the place that I did my real learning so that I could understand how business really works, and what advertising really works, and employment really works. I really figured that out from what I did correctly and what I did incorrectly. And because of my training as a scientist, I'm able to put that into shape so that I can deliver it to other people and they can learn. And though I'm a really good teacher, my biggest strength is that I'm a great learner, and I notice what works and what doesn't work. And I notice, even worse, Heather, that most people get offered lessons, get hit by the lesson. In other words, they get fired or they get hurt or something, and then they keep doing the same thing.
Yeah. So it's okay to go through life doing these little jobs that we think are not leading us where we want to go, because eventually, part of the big picture, they're probably leading us towards where we're supposed to be?
Well, spiritually, I think that's correct. I certainly know that that's how my life unfolded. I don't know what the big picture is for every other person's life. I've just started to figure out my own. But I have been able to identify things. I have been able to notice that when people do what they love, their income skyrockets, their days ill reduces, their incidence of serious illnesses, even ulcers, decreases. I noticed that, and so I started doing only what I love. My income skyrocketed. When I teach it to other people, and they start doing what they love, initially they give me these complaints like, oh, you can't do what you love, or they say silly things like, I like sleeping in, what are you going to do for me? So they say silly things because they can't believe that it's even possible. And when I talk to them and say, tell me someone whom you really like, they might say Seinfeld, or they might say Albert Einstein, who knows what they'll say. And I say, well, tell me something about how they relate to their work. Oh, they loved their work. They were totally dedicated. They just put every moment into it because they had such passion. I said, and they're famous and they're successful and they love what they did and they lived to a ripe old age and all that kind of stuff. And I say, well, why would somebody pay you to do something you're not particularly good at and don't particularly like? If I came to you to apply for a job and I said, I'm not particularly good at it and I don't particularly like to do it, and at the slightest possibility, I'll call in sick. Would you hire me? They say no, and if I hired you, I wouldn't pay you much. Exactly. When you actually do what you love, you get paid far more. You know, there's an ugly line out there that goes like this. I love it so much, I would do it for free, and I hate it when people say that. I train them to say, I love it so much, it's the only thing I'll do for money.
Mm. Now, when you mentioned Seinfeld doing what he loves and getting paid well for it, for him, there's thousands and thousands of comedians out there who might also love what they're doing, but they're not getting paid so much. So what is that secret to going from the point where you are doing what you love for free to actually getting paid what we're worth for doing what we love?
Well, that's a good point. There are people who could be great. Like if you take the example of Jim Carrey, he carried around in his wallet a check payable to himself for $10 million that, of course, he just made up, planting the seed that he wanted to become wealthy. And then he went to Hollywood and worked for a couple years doing odd jobs till he finally got his break. So you're right. Before you get your break or before you make a lot of money, you don't. And the answer is this. I never recommend that people quit their day job and just suddenly start out doing supposedly what they love, because nobody loves going broke. Nobody loves not being able to pay the rent. What I say is you do it in steps, and I've created a program where people move every month towards what they love and away from what they don't love. And when you do it progressively like that, not only can you tell as it's becoming successful that it's going to be or not, but on top of that, when you first start, you don't know exactly what branch of what you love is actually going to flourish. And if you're out there with no safety net and no income, you can't take the risks, or you might go down the wrong path. But if you've got an income from your normal job, even if you don't particularly love it, you can then experiment. You can try two or three different branches of what you love and see what flourishes.
What about also finding what you love in that day job, so to speak, while you are doing it, so that you can enjoy that part as well during this journey?
Yeah, that's an important thing. And people have this idea that there's a dichotomy. There's doing what you hate and there's doing what you love. And right now they're doing what they hate and they want to take a giant step to what they love. And I'm glad that you opened up the opportunity for me to answer this, because doing what you love can occur exactly where you are. In any person's life or in any person's job or in any person's home chores, there's things they love and things they don't love. And what I teach people is how to progressively move towards what they love and away from what they don't love. In your home life, in your chores, in your relationships, in your job. And you might say, oh no, I've got a boss that isn't creative and isn't flexible. Well, that's not true. If you have a task and you're not particularly good at it, and you know that you procrastinate it a lot, and your stomach is all upset when that task comes up every day or every month or at year end or whatever, if there's other people in the company who actually like doing that, because just because you don't like doing something doesn't mean it's inherently bad. It just means you don't like it. If you don't like something and someone else in the company actually likes it, if the two of you go to the boss and say, look, I would like to take on one of her tasks being this, and she would like to take on this task of mine, we would each be able to do a far better job at it, less procrastination. We'd each be happier. We're not asking for a raise. We're just asking to do our job better. I don't think there's a boss around that's going to say, no, I insist you do your job worse and keep procrastinating. No one's going to say that. So every time someone tells me their boss wouldn't allow it, what they're doing is they're saying to me, if I went to my boss and say, I don't want to do this part of my job anymore, well, then of course he would have an objection. But if you do your homework beforehand, and that's what I do. In my home life, there's certain things I like doing. I love cleaning kitchens, so I clean kitchens. And there's other things I don't love, and so I don't do them. And either my girlfriend does it, or the cleaning lady does it, or it doesn't get done. And people are always offended by that and say, what do you mean it doesn't get done? And I say, tell me about your to-do list. Does everything on your to-do list get done? They say, of course not. I cross off a lot of things and write them on the next day's to-do list. I said, well, fine, if lots of things aren't going to get done, or if some things aren't going to get done, just by happenstance, they might as well be the things that you don't like doing, and just cross them off and don't do them.
Some of them might need to get done eventually, though.
Some of them might need to get done, and I teach people ways that they can get done by a magnificent process called delegation. And when people hear delegation, immediately their defenses go up, and they say, I can't afford it. Only big people like the prime minister or the president can delegate, not little people like me. And it's all nonsense. People delegate all the time. If you have kids and you hire a babysitter, you're delegating parenting. If you go out to dinner, you're delegating the preparation of food. If you grab a cab, you're delegating chauffeuring. people delegate all the time. They just don't use that term for it. And so that when it comes to delegating, they're frightened by it. They think it's too big a step and they can't do it. Meanwhile, they've been doing it all along. And so I teach people how to delegate all or part. And Heather, it's the or part that's the biggest thing. For example, someone will say to me, well, I have to exercise. You can't delegate that, can you? Ha, ha, ha. And I say, yes, of course you can. Because delegation isn't just abdication. Delegating isn't just having somebody else do everything. Delegating can be that they do part of it for you. I say, would you like to read? They say, yes. Obviously, I have to read myself. And I say, well, yes, you have to do the reading. But it's not that you're illiterate that means you can't read. It's that you don't get around to reading. Is that correct? They say, yes. I'm not illiterate. I know how to read, but I don't get around to it. I say, are you married? Yes. Are there things that your wife wants you to do if you're a guy? Yes. Well, then say to your wife, choose a chore you'd like me to do, and I'll do it. In exchange, I'd like you to do something for me. I'd like to read 1 hour a week, Monday nights from 9 o'clock to 10 o'clock. If you can support me in that by creating a safe container for me, half an hour before the start time, just remind me. I'll get my book. I'll put on some easy clothes. You can keep the kids away, keep the telephone off, keep the television off, things like that. So I know half an hour beforehand I should do my landing pattern and get ready and find my book, and then I can read in total peace for the hour and feel wonderful. You've delegated the part of reading that you couldn't get done, which was starting and keeping a safe place, a safe haven where you won't be interrupted for that whole hour. And as soon as people hear that, they realize, oh my gosh, in jogging I can't get started, but if a friend called me at 6 in the morning or if one of the local joggers knocked on my door at 6 in the morning or 7 in the morning, I would go out with them. So there you're delegating the guilt trip of getting started. And as soon as people realize they can delegate part of it, and as soon as people realize that other people want to help them, how many people who have a garage have a messy garage? Probably 95% of people with garages have messy garages, and they hate it.
Yeah.
They say things like, I haven't driven into my garage since we moved in here 20 years ago, and things like that. And I say, is there someone in your neighborhood who has a neat garage? They say, yes. I say, knock on their door and say, Bill, can you do me a favor? I hate that my garage is so messy. Can you come over on Saturday morning? I'll give you a beer and a pizza. Help me clean out my garage and teach me how to make it neat. He would probably be overjoyed. He'd probably be so grateful. He'd say, let me bring my sons over too to help schlep away some of the garbage. People usually are so honored to help, and yet we're so frightened to ask.
What do you mean when you mentioned do my landing pattern?
Oh, landing pattern just means, let's say you want to read at 10 o'clock. Well, then at 9:30, you might want to put your pajamas on. You might want to brush your teeth. You might want to get a tea ready. You might want to put your warm slippers on, find your book, put on some quiet music, just that kind of thing, which may take a little while. Or you may just want to meditate a little or calm down or get a couple little chores done so they're off your mind by 10 o'clock. That's all I mean.
Okay. Now, let's take a deeper look at the steps going from what you don't love towards what you do love. And let's go back and take the example again of the comedian. So we've got someone who's working as a chartered accountant by day. He really loves being a comedian. He might go out sometimes and do the little open mics, but he really wants to get to the point where he can be the next Seinfeld and make a ton of money doing what he loves, being a comedian. So what are some example steps that he might take to get from accountant to comedian?
All right, well, I'm going to generalize it because there's not that many accountants wanting to be comedians who are listening. So I got your question. I'm going to generalize the answer.
Okay.
I have a program called Monthly Mentor, and your listeners, if they wish, can look up the website, monthlymentor.com.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that I teach, this is a mentoring program that I offer all around the world. The very first thing that I teach is to have a list of loves. I call it annual love letters. And I teach a really fascinating way to get an uncensored list of your loves. The problem is, A, that people don't have a list of their loves. They all want to do more of what they love. I say, what do you love? And they have no idea. Once they say my kids and my spouse and my dog, they kind of lost. And so you must have a list of your loves, and it must be uncensored. Because if you just sat down to write a list of your loves, you would censor it. Let's say you have three siblings, brothers and sisters. You might want to write down, I love my siblings. But maybe you don't. Maybe there's one of them you don't particularly like at all, and the other two you do like. You have to write down the truth. You have to know that no one's going to see the list, and you have to write down the truth. Because if you write down all your siblings, even if there's one that you don't particularly like, then you're writing down social obligations and not loves. And at the end of your life, you'll have lived a life of doing good duty, but you wouldn't have lived a life of your loves. So I teach a unique way to have an uncensored, categorized, prioritized list of your loves that you can truly use to track to see if the decisions that you make in your life are moving towards your loves or not towards your loves. For example, people in my mentoring program, they'll come up to me and they'll say, look, I've lost my job, but I got two job offers, and I'm not sure which one to take. This one pays more, but it's farther from my home, and this one pays less, but it's closer to my home. And I say, well, which one supports your loves? They say, oh, yeah, I did it, and I forgot to use it. I say, well, bring me your list of loves, and let's go through it. And think of job A, and which one of those loves would it support, and think of job B, and which one of the loves would it support. And usually they can instantly make the decision, and it has nothing to do with which one's closer, which one pays more, all that stuff. It has to do with their loves. Everybody wants to move closer to what they love, but they don't have a list of loves. And if you have a list of loves, you'll move closer towards them. So that's the first answer to your question. And the second answer to your question is a very special way that I use to teach my monthly mentor members how to record their goals. And it's called MTO, Minimum Target Outrageous. No one on the planet teaches this. I'm the only one. And it's the most magnificent way to write goals. And it's the thing that guarantees that you move closer to your loves every single month, no matter what. It's the thing that guarantees you actually achieve your goals every month, no matter what. And Heather, that's a giant claim, but listen to what MTO means. Let's say you have a goal that you want. You're an accountant, you want to be a comedian, and so you have a goal, I want to be a comedian. Well, then years might go by and you're not a comedian. What I do is I teach my clients that every goal must have a deadline within 1 month so that you're accountable. In other words, you can't have a goal, I'm going to run a marathon, I'm going to be a comedian, I'm going to be a millionaire, and then have no deadline or have a deadline 10 years away, because then you can slack off for 10 years and no one knows whether you're going to make it or not. So you have to have a goal for every single month, and their minimum means what you can be counted on to do based on your past performance. So you have to be able to achieve the minimum. It has to be more like a to-do item than a goal. Target is the typical thing you think of as a goal. It's a stretch, and outrageous is beyond what you could ever believe. So a minimum for this accountant might be to look in the web or look in the Yellow Pages and find all of the comedy clubs in his city. And a target might be to phone four of them, and outrageous might be to get an audition.
I hope you've enjoyed the first segment of our interview, but it's not over. There's a full 200% more than what you just heard, where we delve deeper into these success principles. To unwrap the full interview and get lots more tools for success, just sign up to become a Success Unwrapped member on any level you choose at successunwrapped.com/members.
This has been Success Unwrapped with Heather Vail.
Be sure to tune in to the next edition of Success Unwrapped, helping you to unwrap and discover your own potential for success. Until next time, keep unwrapping. I'm Heather Vail. This podcast is part of the Blueberry Network at blueberry.com. That's spelled B-L-U-B-R-R-Y.com.